Hello. Welcome to this week's reading of the Virginia Mercury, an online publication concerning Virginia government and policy. I'm Vicki Roberts for the Virginia Voice. Our first article is titled, Virginia Lawmakers Return to Richmond as Budget Battle Fuels Shutdown Talk. This was written by Graham Mumaugh and posted on April 17. Veto session begins Wednesday after weeks of partisan combat. The debate over how high taxes need to be to properly fund core government services is a more normal topic than many of the hyper-partisan culture war issues that now dominate politics. But the budget battle playing out between Governor Glenn Youngkin and the Democratic-led General Assembly is anything but routine. One day before state lawmakers were set to return to Richmond to take up Youngkin's amendments and vetoes, House Speaker Don Scott, Democrat Portsmouth, posted a campaign-style video accusing Youngkin of standing in the way of a bipartisan budget that boosted funding for K-12 education. Don't let pretending Glenn shut down the government, the video concludes, invoking the prospect of what could happen if Virginia's politically divided government doesn't pass a new budget before the current one expires on July 1. When the General Assembly reconvenes, the budget and the 233 amendments Youngkin proposed to it will be the top item on the agenda. But after weeks of fiery rhetoric, it's unclear how the budget fight might de-escalate toward a more amicable conclusion. Tuesday evening, the Youngkin administration released new financial data showing March revenues were up 5% compared to a year ago, results the governor has used to argue the state can fund policy priorities with money already coming in without needing to raise taxes. March's solid results provide stable ground for us to work together to land a budget that meets our collective goals, Youngkin said in a news release. If the legislature rejects most or all of Youngkin's amendments, the governor could still veto the budget, a move that could require lawmakers to hold a special session to try again for some sort of compromise. Few lawmakers appear to be in a compromising type of mood. One of Youngkin's top critics in the legislature, Senator Louise Lucas, Democrat Portsmouth, posted a social media meme showing herself in boxing gloves, seemingly on the verge of socking the governor. Buckle up, Glenn. I am coming back to Richmond on Wednesday to deal with your nonsense, Lucas said in her post on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. The latest anti-Youngkin broadsides from Democratic leaders come after the governor vetoed a record 153 bills approved during the 2024 session and held several media appearances blasting the legislature's budget proposal as backward for including a tax increase. The Democrats' approach, Youngkin told a crowd at a Richmond area diner last month, is about trying to tax Virginians as much as you can take before you move away. Youngkin has softened his tone more recently as he unveiled a new spending plan he called the Common Ground Budget, which abandons his push for tax cuts and funds some policy priorities sought by Democratic legislators, just without the digital sales tax that was envisioned as paying for them. Virginia political analyst Bob Holdsworth said the budget dispute began last year when Youngkin introduced a proposal with broad tax cuts, even though Virginians had just elected Democratic majorities in both legislative chambers. Youngkin presented a budget as if he had won the election, Holdsworth said. It had no possibility of being taken seriously, and he didn't seem to recognize that the dynamic had completely changed. The governor himself proposed expanding the state's sales tax to apply to digital downloads and streaming services, a change both sides have characterized as a way to modernize a tax code still built around physical goods instead of the increasingly online economy. However, he proposed a digital sales tax as a way to offset other tax cuts, a proposal he dropped from his latest offer that envisions leaving Virginia tax policies unchanged. The General Assembly's budget anticipates roughly $1 billion in new revenue from the digital sales tax, money Democratic leaders want to use to boost funding for K-12 schools. Youngkin has insisted the state's finances are strong enough to spend more without raising taxes, but skeptical Democrats contend the governor's plans rely on gimmicks like shuffling money around and changing when particular initiatives get funded. Youngkin's proposal envisions a roughly $64 billion general fund compared to a $65.5 billion general fund in the General Assembly's budget. The general fund is the main pot of discretionary money policymakers can spend on new initiatives. Non-general fund money is earmarked for a particular purpose, such as gas taxes dedicated specifically to fund highways and roads. The governor and the legislature are also at odds over language in the budget that would require Virginia to participate in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a multi-state initiative aimed at reducing planet warming carbon emissions. Youngkin pulled Virginia out of the program after becoming governor, portraying it as a backdoor tax regular Virginians were paying on their power bills. Democrats argue Youngkin didn't have the power to make that move and are challenging his decision to remove Virginia from a program that provides funding for flood resilience and energy efficiency programs. In addition to the budget, the General Assembly will also take up Youngkin's overhaul of a controversial bill to legalize and regulate skill games, the slots-like gambling machines that have spread widely in Virginia convenience stores, truck stops, and sports bars. The governor has proposed a much tougher regulatory approach to the machines than what the General Assembly approved. The legislature is also expected to take up Youngkin's veto of a bipartisan bill that would have allowed local governments to raise sales taxes to build new schools. The measure passed with enough Republican support that the General Assembly could potentially override the governor on the issue. That was Graham Mumaugh's article, Virginia Lawmakers Return to Richmond as Budget Battle Fuels Shutdown Talk, posted April 17. And continuing with news from the Mercury, our next article is titled, Northern Virginia, as part of regional approach, adopts goal of maintaining 50% tree canopy. This is written by Charlie Paulin and posted April 17. Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. The Washington, D.C. area has seen tree canopy decline from over 50% to just under that amount in less than a decade, according to the Regional Government Authority. Officials with the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, which includes Northern Virginia jurisdictions, voted last week to set a goal of maintaining at least that 50% amount. There's a lot of things that are unpredictable, said Michael Knapp, MWCOG Regional Tree Canopy Subcommittee Chair and Tree Specialist with the Montgomery County Department of Permitting Services. We feel that the 50% is attainable and realistic based on current conditions. The goal, which jurisdictional members may act on voluntarily, comes after the MWCOG in 2020 adopted its Climate and Energy Action Plan, which includes planning for urban tree canopy adoption to achieve the region's climate and energy goals. The recent tree canopy goal is also the culmination of years of work to produce a report that found the region in 2014 had 51.3% of land covered by tree canopy. In 2023, that number decreased, spurred by development and other reasons, to an estimated 49.6%, a trend that, if it continues, would result in about 44.4% of tree coverage by 2050. The idea is to use trees and forests as a means of improving the quality of life and environmental health in the region by optimizing the services and benefits they provide, Knapp said in a phone interview. In order to sustain the same level of environmental help, you would either have to put money into man-made technologies that provide those types of services and benefits, or experience a decline in environmental health and economic vitality. Trees have been proven to contribute numerous benefits to the environment, from reducing stormwater pollution runoff and sediment erosion to capturing carbon and mitigating heat islands. The report used information from the Chesapeake Bay Program Model, years 2014 and 2018, which identifies tree canopy as a way to meet pollution reduction goals. More recent Bay Program data is being finalized for next year. MWCOG also used satellite imagery to determine the percentage of tree canopy within a locality. In terms of acreage, the largest loss in Virginia happened in Loudoun County, with about 2,800 acres swallowed up primarily by home development, Knapp said. The region has also seen an increase in data center development, which Knapp said comes after the region had branded itself as a tech corridor and home to former internet provider powerhouse AOL. But because of land being converted to housing, Loudoun County has an opportunity to make gains in canopy because of Virginia tree ordinances that require builders to replace trees lost during the home building process, Knapp said, as opposed to land being developed for commercial industry uses. Arlington and Alexandria made gains on tree cover, adding 7.6 acres and 18.8 acres, respectively. Knapp said the increases are likely due to trees planted under those localities' regulations coming to bear, Knapp said. Those levels are expected to remain stable given the amount of development that occurs on a yearly basis, he added. The largest canopy increase was Frederick County, Maryland, with about 2,100 acres, which Knapp surmised benefited from a phenomenon known as pioneer forests. Frederick County, similar to more rural Loudoun and Prince William counties in Virginia, has land that originally was set aside for agricultural purposes, but had been converted to developed land in recent years. If there were economic difficulties that delayed development, The land may have been untouched for years before being built on, and trees sprouted during the wait, leading to the canopy now getting picked up by the satellite imagery. This represents an opportunity to pick up some tree canopy as development occurs, similar to what happened in Northern Virginia, which was one of the top dairy producers in the state in the 1950s, before it became developed into the bedroom community that it is, Knapp added. Fairfax County had tree conservation and stream valley preservation ordinances they could use. As those areas were developed, some of those pioneers were given the chance to develop and mature, said Knapp. The 104-page report from MWCOG outlines the cost offset by maintaining tree canopy and offers guidance for preserving trees that may be more susceptible to die from diseases or increased moisture from heavy rain. There's just a lot of outreach and public education that local governments can do, Knapp said. They need to instill a sense of ownership in the community. Local governments cannot do this on their own. One counterargument to tree preservation requirements is the reduction of the number of houses that can be built on a lot, thereby reducing the housing stock size and increasing housing costs. Andrew Clark, Vice President of Government Relations with the Home Builders Association of Virginia, said in a previous interview, "Developers will find a way to make these ordinances work, but it may undercut localities' objective to provide an array of housing. That's just kind of a trade-off." But Knapp said a provision in Virginia's statute allows for deviations to be made if allowed densities can't be met, and stakeholders that worked on Virginia's tree conservation law in 2007 had reached consensus by creating a cooperative process between the two perspectives. The trees, Knapp said, can be a marketing tool for prospective tenants who have come to desire them, which the home builders acknowledged. If you just planned for trees when you're doing your development, you won't sacrifice your houses, added Brian LeCouture, MWCOG Principal Environmental Planner and Regional Urban Forester. And whereas putting homes on farmland may cost less than cutting forest land, if developers plan to use forest land, which just happens, LeCouture said, it can be less costly to preserve existing trees instead of needing to plant new pens. We're not trying to pit agriculture against silviculture, said LeCouture. The idea is to just put trees in the plan. Recently, Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed bills that would have made Northern Virginia's tree conservation process during home building an option statewide. Another bill would have made some localities' existing requirement to replace trees lost through home building available to towns, cities, and counties across the Commonwealth. The fact that the bills made it out of the House of Delegates and the Senate to the governor's desk is quite the achievement, LeCouture said. I have a strong sense they will eventually make it to a governor's desk in the coming years. People are definitely aware of these now and realize how important trees are to our environment. The Potomac River Conservancy, which backed those bills this session, supports MWCOG's tree-boosting goal, as does the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Increased tree canopy goals and affordable housing don't have to be mutually exclusive, said Anna Mudd, Senior Director of Policy at the Potomac River Conservancy, in a statement. We look forward to continuing to work with all stakeholders to develop creative and equitable solutions that ensure that everyone in the Potomac River region has the opportunity to live in communities with clean air, clean water, and access to green spaces. That was Charlie Paulin's article, Northern Virginia, as part of regional approach, adopts goal of maintaining 50% tree canopy. And this was posted on April 17. Our next article is titled, Youngkin proposes using Northern Virginia Investment Fund to support Metro. This was written by Nathaniel Klein and posted April 17. In a state budget amendment, Governor Glenn Youngkin pledged to support Metro with an additional $133.7 million amid a projected shortfall for the transit agency. The pledge came with a caveat. It would strip funding from a transit investment fund used by Northern Virginia jurisdictions. Leaders from the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, the regional body of jurisdictions responsible for funding Metro, urged lawmakers to reject the amendment. The General Assembly worked hard and came to a compromise, and we believe it's the right thing to do to reject the amendment and then re-engage with the administration to find common ground, and this is not something that we believe the governor is ideologically opposed to, said Matt DeFerranti, commission chair. Last week, the governor announced his pledge after the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, which operates Metro, projected a $750 million shortfall next fiscal year, starting during the summer. In Youngkin's initial budget proposed in December, he did not include any additional funds for the transit agency. Since then, Virginia's jurisdictional partners, Maryland and the District of Columbia, have committed millions to Metro. D.C. committed up to $200 million, and Maryland is pledging $150 million. In 2018, the three jurisdictions established a dedicated funding source for Metro to help address any maintenance issues. The Virginia General Assembly created the WMATA Capital Fund to uphold its portion of the agreement. In December, the governor told reporters that Metro must create a plan to address the change in ridership and service demand before any additional funding is appropriated. The governor's proposal. Youngkin's proposal is less than the $149.5 million proposed by lawmakers who did not intend to use funds from NVTC. According to the budget amendment, Virginia would provide $35.7 million from the general fund to NVTC in fiscal year 2026 to support operating assistance for Metro, in addition to the $98 million supplemental allocations held by NVTC. The commission said in an April 12 letter to lawmakers that the $98 million was given under previous Democratic Governor Ralph Northam's administration for the localities to use to address the immediate Metro payments as the country emerged from the pandemic. Under the governor's amendment, the letter said, the commission would be required to pay its normal Metro operating bill, which is approximately $340 million, and an additional increase of $119 million in fiscal year 2025. Helping Metro. Last week, Metro joined the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments in announcing the launch of a new joint initiative to create a unified vision for transit service in the region as Virginia lawmakers weigh the governor's proposal and conditions. Our public transit network is our region's most significant shared asset, said Clark Mercer, executive director for COG, who added he was pleased leaders are seizing this valuable opportunity to collaborate and ensure the region's public transit is positioned for long-term success. Randy Clark, Metro's general manager and chief executive officer, said on Friday's The Politics Hour radio show that he expects the board of directors to vote on its budget next week, which avoids those draconian service cuts. Nearly two dozen groups, including the Coalition for Smarter Growth, Virginia Bicycling Federation, and the Southern Environmental Law Center, signed a statement urging lawmakers to reject the governor's amendment and restore the funding approved by the General Assembly. Failure to provide additional state funding will have dire consequences for the workforce and economy of Northern Virginia and the D.C. region, the April 12th statement reads. It would mean massive service cuts and fare hikes at Metro, higher transportation costs for workers, and more congestion on the roads, and discourage next-generation companies and workers from locating in the D.C. region. While Clark shied away from commenting on the governor's decision to pledge less than what the General Assembly voted on, he did say that the current funding model is complex and non-traditional in the transit industry, which prevents the agency from being able to fully predict its ongoing service needs in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. The fact that we kind of go through this every other year is unhealthy for Metro. Metro can't do good service planning, workforce planning, capital fleet planning, Clark said. It's also not good for our jurisdictional partners. According to NVTC, Metro has continued to be a key economic driver for the Commonwealth, generating $1 billion in state tax revenue annually. This article was titled, Youngkin Proposes Using Northern Virginia Investment Fund to Support Metro, written by Nathaniel Klein, posted April 17, and shortened a bit for our purposes today due to time constraints. And that wraps up our reading of the Virginia Mercury for this week. This article can be heard on demand at virginiavoice.org. I'm Vicki Roberts for the Virginia Voice. Thank you for listening.